This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 25th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Dr. Charles A. White Periodontics and Dental Implants, a regional practice offering periodontal care to new and existing patients for over 25 years. Information regarding appointments and consultation, gum grafting, computer-guided dental implants, and minimally invasive laser therapy is available at drcawhite.com.
On this edition of Ozarks, Getting Under the Ozarks, a conversation with the co-authors of the book Cave Life. They'll be at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville tomorrow, and they'll explain today what can be discovered by studying the creatures that live in the caves below us, including the health of our groundwater. And speaking of water, organizers of the Northwest Arkansas Water Walk want more of us to be aware of the lack of safe drinking water for people in developing nations.
Those stories and more ahead. First, these items. Cuts in federal funding will mean the Arkansas Department of Human Services will be forced to eliminate two programs aimed at preventing child abuse. Amy Webb, a spokesperson with DHS, says the decision was difficult but necessary to allow the continued funding for caseworkers.
We wanted to preserve the ability to, you know, investigate and respond to allegations of abuse and neglect. So we've been looking for ways to take that reduction without affecting the actual investigations.
Amy Webb says the state will lose $2.2 million in July. That money was sliced away from a federal program.
We're going to have to eliminate funding for some prevention programs. And one of those was the Human Services Workers in Schools program, and then also some funding for 9 family resource centers in the state.
The center served more than 11,000 families last year. Officials say even deeper cuts are expected in 2014, which, if they materialize, could have an impact on the ability to investigate reports of child abuse.
A member of the Fayetteville Board of Education will serve on the Arkansas Commission for Coordination of Education Efforts. Steve Percival was appointed to the 4-year term by the Arkansas Speaker of the House, Robert Moore, yesterday. Steve Percival has been on the Fayetteville Board of Education since 1995. He served as the board's president from 1999 to 2008. The University of Arkansas will unveil a Winnebago converted to a solar energy lab next week. The Green Mobile Solar Energy Lab will be driven across the state to schools so students can participate in hands-on solar energy experiments. The 33-foot Winnebago will operate with a conventional gasoline engine, but will be outfitted with a half dozen solar panels that will provide the power for the traveling lab's equipment. The new part of the university fleet will be formally introduced in a ceremony Monday afternoon.
The United States Attorney General Eric Holder told a crowd of about 1,000 in Little Rock last night that he is creating a new oversight position in the Department of Justice to oversee its operations against human trafficking. He channeled former President Bill Clinton in explaining the importance of the work.
The strength of our nation and the prosperity of its citizens depends on how we treat and how well we protect the weakest and most vulnerable among us. And as President Clinton, unsurprisingly, may have summed it up best on the day that the Clinton Center was dedicated in his honor, that in this great country, when I quote him, everybody counts.
We'll hear more from the Attorney General's speech last night later in this edition of Ozarks at Large.
The 62nd season for Opera in the Ozarks, announced yesterday, will include 3 familiar works. Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music will be included in the summer repertoire, as will Puccini's La Boheme and Mozart's The Magic Flute. The season will open at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs on June 22nd and run through July 20th. The company of emerging singers from across the country will perform 3 times at the Arendt Arts Center in Bentonville during the month-long run. The Arkansas Land Commissioner John Thurston will give the city of Fayetteville a nearly 6-acre swath of land tomorrow in a ceremony at City Hall. The property is being donated for city park use and was the former R&P electroplating company that operated from 1974 to 1997. In 1999, the Environmental Protection Agency helped remove materials from the site, and in 2010, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality approved the remedial action taken at the site. The city requested the land be donated for parks and land use in late 2010.
The new head football coach at the University of Arkansas says he plans to work toward winning a national title during his 10-month contract. John L. Smith, an Arkansas assistant for 3 years, was introduced as the new head coach yesterday afternoon. He told reporters yesterday the upcoming season could be special.
We just have to continue on. Like I said, let's get more excited. Let's lock it up together and trudge on. You know, we have to make it a special season. We have to embrace the adversity and say we're going to be better because of it, and we're moving on.
The university's athletic director, Jeff Long, says the new coach's 40 years of experience in college football makes him the right person for the job.
The Arkansas Razorback baseball team is 29-12 after defeating Oral Roberts University in Fayetteville last night. Arkansas's pitchers combined on a one-hitter to win 6-1. Arkansas will play number 5 Florida 3 times this weekend. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Lions baseball team will take a 7-game winning streak to Texas this weekend. Last night, the Lions topped Central Oklahoma 10-2. The Lions are scheduled to play the University of Texas of the Permian Basin 3 times this weekend in Odessa, Texas.
This is Ozarks at Large. The book Cave Life of Oklahoma and Arkansas provides a look of what is swimming and crawling around under our feet. These creatures can tell a lot about the health of our groundwater and can even lead to advances in medicine. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with two of the book's co-authors, Geo Groening and Michael Slay. They began the conversation by discussing what first drew them to cave life during their days on the University of Arkansas campus.
For me, it's the thrill of the unknown. One of my first trips when I first met Geo and started working with Art was they sent me to a couple of caves, and I discovered a crayfish and a cavefish that hadn't been seen in these sites in 20 or 30 years. And so it's like right in my own backyard, I could go somewhere and just with a little bit of effort, crawling through dark holes and through mud and water, I could make major discoveries. And so that was just so exciting. I felt like, you know, Darwin on the Beagle. I could go and make these really interesting finds. And so I was totally hooked. And that keeps me going. It keeps me doing the crawls and then squeezes. And so we continue to find new things as we go out and look for stuff.
And Geo?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it would be the scientific frontier, you know, a new science and a lot of undocumented life and the challenge, too, of difficulty and struggle to work in that environment, too.
What are some of the difficulties?
Some situations you're using ropes to rappel down into the caves or climb back out. Sometimes we're, you know, geared up in wetsuits and using dive masks and snorkels to swim through passages. Picture, you know, if you're going to do something out on the surface, you know, you want to go collect butterflies or you want to count plants or something, you can just walk out into a field and do that, and you have all of your equipment right there with you. Now picture trying to do that 3 miles from an entrance in complete darkness at about 55 degrees, where you sometimes have to drag all of your equipment behind you on your foot to get through a tight, narrow passage. So just the logistics of trying to get, you know, in, do the surveys, count the animals that are there, and then get back out in a reasonable time. It's the logistics of some of these trips are sometimes extremely difficult.
Well, I've been in 2 caves in Arkansas, I think. You know, Blanchard Springs,
mm-hmm.
and also the cave at Devil's Den. And I feel like those are 2 completely different caves, right?
They are.
Yeah.
Definitely. And Devil's Den Cave is a sandstone cave. It was created under different, you know, geological circumstance than Blanchard Springs. But both of those caves, you know, are a nice sort of cross-section of what, you know, a person could see when they go underground. And as well as in both of those caves, it's interesting that you mention those, but both of those caves, you know, are caves that are really popular, lots of people know about, but we have actually found rare species in both of those caves. Devil's Den has a little arachnid, a little kind of a pseudoscorpion, it's an animal that's real small, it looks like a scorpion but doesn't have the stinging tail. Devil's Den is the only known place for this particular species. So that species only occurs in that cave. That's the only place in the world it occurs in. Same thing for Blanchard. Blanchard has several small animals, small insects or invertebrates that are also, Blanchard being the only place that they're known. So, you know, you've been to two sites that have these extremely rare animals, and you've probably walked through there and walked right past them.
You mentioned the scorpion-like thing in Devil's Den. What other cool organisms have you found?
I think the coolest thing by far are the vertebrates that are cave adapted, the fishes and salamanders that are only found in these caves and springs and nowhere else in the world are, I think, the most rare and just, you know, it's the chance of them surviving that long and evolving, you know, is just a true miracle, I think. Like, for example, you don't have cave fish, you know, west of Oklahoma.
I think that, I'm a bug guy, and so I have a bug bias, and so I agree that, I mean, it's...
Not a fish guy?
Yeah, not a fish guy. Although Gio's perfectly correct. I mean, it is amazing that we have these larger animals, you know, fish and crayfish and salamanders that are using these sites, but for me, I'm a bug guy, and so... Some of the more, you know, we've discovered probably, was it 15 plus species that are new to science here in Arkansas and in Oklahoma? And so
I think if you add the two states, it's probably upper 20s.
Upper 20s, yeah. For the two states?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a significant number of species that we've discovered just by visiting these sites. And, you know, bulk of those are the bugs and the creepy crawlies. Mainly because they're just more, you know, those groups in general are more diverse across, you know, the U.S., across the globe. And so, but for me, yeah, finding these little things like pseudoscorpions or beetles or flies or millipedes, you know, that's also exciting to me because some of them, just like the cavefish and crayfish, you know, that Arkansas or Oklahoma, that's the only places they're known anywhere.
Why do we care about these things that are living underneath us? Why are they important?
You want to take a crack at that, Gio?
Yeah, sure, Mike. There's one argument is kind of like local pride that these are very special Arkansans. You know, there are some animals in caves that and the systems in general, they could be considered doing some kind of ecological service to humans as well. So, you know, things like cleaning up the water or indicating where pollution could be, you know, things like that. So there are helping manage the water resource. These animals give us information about the health of the aquifers and the water resources.
I know around town they've been painting the... Have you noticed that mm-hmm. they've been painting the
stormwater,
yeah, just to kind of draw attention to mm-hmm. what we're putting down mm-hmm. down our drains? And I mean, it's all related.
It completely is. I mean, the thing with these subterranean systems is it's out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, with the storm drain covers, that's what they're really highlighting, is that we don't think about it because it goes down a drain and it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Gio was pointing out, I mean, the importance, you know, part of the importance of protecting these systems and keeping them healthy is that you can think of them as canaries in the coal mines.
Right.
You know, if we're doing what we need to be through best management practices or conservation or protection on the surface, you know, if we're protecting those species and things that occur underground and in the groundwater, and we're ultimately protecting the drinking water that we're actually using. And so there's a direct connection there between trying to protect these habitats and protect, you know, ultimately protecting ourselves.
Okay. How many caves did you go to for the book?
I would have to look that up again. I think we actually put that in the front of the book. Compiled it.
Let us preface something though too, and the book is a mixture of the new data that we collected from Mike and myself and Dante and our teams going out. But I would say at least half of the data is from previous research.
That's true.
So the book is kind of a mixture of art discoveries and revisiting sites, you know, but it's also just a huge labor of love, you know, going through all of the published literature and collecting, you know, records of things found in caves. But Mike and I have probably done about 300 plus sites each, and not always that much overlap between the two of us.
So who was your intended audience?
We wanted it to be academic and something that researchers could cite, you know, to have some kind of authority. And so we had to have, you know, that kind of standard. So in that sense, it's an academic book for cave scientists. But we also wanted it to be something that cavers could, could take maybe into a cave, or at least, you know, on a camping trip with them, and learn more about cave life and maybe idea a few things from the book. And so I think there's a tension in the book between being it kind of dry and academic, and then having it be just a coffee table type book too. And I'm not sure we've fully resolved that dilemma.
Any scary experiences? Cave experiences you can tell me about?
I've got plenty. Mike, you want to give any ideas?
I think, if you do this kind of work, you know, you're psychologically, you're always pushing, you know, the boundary of what you can deal with, being through squeezes, being in passages where, you know, the water is up to your chin and your head's barely out of the water, and it's, you sort of gradually kind of work your way into doing those kinds of things.
Michael Slay and Geo Groening will be at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville, along with their co-author, Dante Fanolio, tomorrow evening at 7 for a book signing and presentation. The event is hosted by the Nature Conservancy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Saturday, a newly founded charitable organization called the Northwest Arkansas Water Walk will host a fundraising event to highlight the lack of access to clean drinking water in underprivileged families in developing nations. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar has the details.
Imagine walking an average of 6 hours a day to get water. According to the website of Charity Water, a New York-based nonprofit dedicated to making clean water more accessible, close to a billion people in developing nations spend billions of hours every year walking to the nearest water source. Gracie Martin is the vice president of Northwest Arkansas Water Walk. She says these individuals, often women and children, make these trips with a jerry can on their backs.
A jerry can is something that we would use here. It's the 5-gallon diesel fuel yellow jerry cans that we use here to hold gasoline. In developing nations and third world countries, that signifies water to the people that live there. That is typically the tool that they use to carry water to and from their homes.
These jerry cans, once full of water, can weigh up to 40 pounds. But this water is often filthy and contains dangerous microbes that can lead to diarrhea, dehydration, and even death. According to a United Nations statistic quoted on the Charity Water website, a tenth of the global disease's burden can be prevented by improving water supply quality and making it more accessible. To make a difference in the lives of individuals with no or less access to clean drinking water, the Northwest Arkansas Water Walk is hosting a fundraiser at the Lake Fayetteville Levee this Saturday at 11 a.m.
So what we wanted to do was fund water projects partnering with an organization called Charity Water, based out of New York. And what they do is the weight breaks down is $5,000 gives one water project to a community that provides clean drinking water to 500 people for the rest of their life. And that's just, you know, that's a rough estimate. Sometimes it's often more people than that are having that get access to clean water through the work that we're doing.
The event is being organized by the Northwest Arkansas Water Walk, a newly founded charitable organization based in Springdale.
We're just a group of people that got together and saw that with all the needs for charity, specifically the water crisis in sub-Saharan Africa, Southeast Asia, and Latin America, there's so much that needs to be done, but not necessarily something that one person can take care of or even a small group of people. So we just wanted to bring Northwest Arkansas together so that we could mobilize our community to bring global measurable change.
Martin says the Northwest Arkansas Water Walk is attempting to raise $10,000 that will fund two water projects through Charity Water.
What's really cool about the way Charity Water does it, that's the organization we're partnering with, is that they do GPS tracking on every water project that they fund so that 18 months from the day that we donate, we'll be able to get on Google Maps and see exactly where the water projects that we funded are. So it's, you know, it's super doable. It's very measurable. You can see exactly where your finances are going.
Martin says the suggested donation for participating in the awareness walk is $20 per person. The event will be hosted this Saturday between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m.
We're asking people to get signed up and sponsored to come carry a jerry can across the levee at Lake Fayetteville. It's about a half-mile stretch. You'll be able to select different weights of jerry cans, so it's something that anybody can do. We'll have 5 pounds, 15 pounds, 25 pounds, and 40 pounds, just, you know, to raise awareness and funds to build water projects. So you'll just come carry your jerry can across. We'll be handing out water and fresh fruit and encouraging people and giving out information. It'll be a fun time. It'll be good.
The Northwest Arkansas Water Walk will host an awareness walk and fundraiser this Saturday morning at the Lake Fayetteville Levee. More information is available at mycharity.org/NWA Water Walk. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
We've made it to the 25th day of April, 2012. It's a Wednesday. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, is with us.
And tonight's a little slower. Just a little. Couple of choices. It's jazz night at UAFS at 7:30. They're performing at 2nd Street Live in Fort Smith. It's a free show. Mm-hmm. And Switchfoot. Huh. I had hopes I'd get that right the first time, but it's not working out. Switchfoot, the Christian rock band, earned a 2011 Grammy for Best Rock Gospel Album with Hello Hurricane, performs at 9 o'clock tonight at George's Majestic Lounge with special guest The Rocket Summer, and tickets are $21.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Coming in with music provided by Bruce Allen, who will be playing at Music on the Mountain the first Tuesday of May, May 1st, 7 p.m. Bruce, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here, Kyle.
What'd you just play for us?
I've just played a new ditty that's sort of a song in progress, which happens to me sometimes. It's a musical ditty, and I keep thinking there are lyrics somewhere. It even has a title. So I'm not sure if it's finished or not.
Can you share the title with us, or is that still a personal?
Well, I can share the title. It was a thought that came to my mind. Don't hold me to everything that I say. Just because I exclaim doesn't mean that it's going to be that way forever. So that, but that was a real upbeat kind of piece. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, you know, let go of that. I'm moving on, growing, hopefully.
You grew up in Texas.
I am. I'm from Houstonian.
Yeah, and you like guitars. Of all kinds, don't
well,
you?
Well, sure, right. Jazz, blues, folk, rock.
Did you have a guitar when you were a kid?
I probably was, best I can tell, almost 13. got my first acoustic guitar. The Beatles were big, you know, mm-hmm. that's my era. So everybody played guitar then. I just really never quit.
And you've been, but now I said you grew up in Texas. You've been in Arkansas a while.
30, well, I can date that by my marriage. 34 years been in Arkansas.
People may have seen you at the Back 40. Is that right?
I was a regular at the Back 40, sometimes two or three nights a week over there back in the 80s, sure.
What's different from the Bruce Allen that we might have seen at the Back 40 and the one we might see May 1st?
Well, I'd like to think that's a little bit more sophisticated. I was full on with the one acoustic guitar and trying to sound like a whole band, and I don't beat the guitar quite as hard. I really can't. Some of the tunes might be the same, but there's a lot more modern folk music that I've enjoyed, and I've just played a lot of tunes over the years that I hope informs my playing considerably since then. But those days were fun, too.
Tell me about the guitar you have here. This has been with you a while, it looks like.
I have bought this guitar on my 50th birthday, which is...
Oh, so it hasn't been with you that long.
10 years ago. But this is actually 1952 Martin. It's all mahogany. And I found it on my birthday. I took the day off, as I like to do, hit music stores, on my birthday. And I just found this. And it was fairly inexpensive because it's got cracks all in it. But it just sounds great. Plays great. And it's probably, of all the guitars I have, the one I play the most.
And it seems smaller?
It is small, three-quarter size, right?
What does that allow? Does it make a difference if it's three-quarter size?
It's a little bit of a smaller sound in general. One of the places I play is in a hospital, and it's a room with tile and bare walls. And it's like if I took the big Martin in there, I've got a D28 as well. It would be probably too boomy, too noisy for the room. So it's a little bit quiet compared to a full-size guitar.
When people hear you say you play at a hospital.
I do. Long-term, I've done this. My field, when I'm not playing the guitar, is in mental health. But I have actually had a very long-standing gig at the VA hospital here in Fayetteville. I played twice a week for the last 14 years on the psychiatric unit. And I love it. It's great. And the guys there seem to really love it, too. I say guys. It's still, 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a male that's there in the hospital at VA. But.
What can – this might not be a fair question to ask, but what can music do to help us?
Well, I think thinking about the therapeutic mm-hmm. Perspective, I think that it really connects often people with earlier times in their life when maybe family connections were stronger, or perhaps times in their church life or their religious life. I like to think just the artistic pursuit of it has some validity there too. But I mean, there's a lot of emotion in music, a lot of different thoughts and ideas that can be subject for a group discussion, say in a psychiatric setting. And I've done it in other sort of training retreats and that sort of thing too, kind of a thematic. And sometimes write a song based on that situation that people are facing. And sometimes with the therapy groups, music therapy groups write a song with the group that kind of defines where they are at that point in time and maybe where they want to be.
That seems pretty special. I mean, if folks are with you and you're writing a song together, they're letting you become a little bit more personal than the normal acquaintance.
Well, it does. I like to think it deepens it rather quickly. It's also often very surprising to people that they would be engaged at that level and that there would wind up being a song that's, I guess you could say, a product after that. There will be a couple of songs that I've written in that format that I'm going to do on Tuesday, the 1st at Mount Sequoia, just because that's part of what I do. So,
does playing in a certain place affect you differently when you're playing?
I think every venue, and to me it's like every different guitar, too. You mm-hmm. pick up a different guitar, it feels different. You hear different things. You play different things. I think that even though I like to just play what feels right to me, I'm always aware of the connection that I want to make with the people that I'm with at that time. And so it's very much influenced by what I am picking up from the people in the group, assumptions that I make, and you throw out some music and you get some feedback as to whether, are you making a connection or do you want to shift that? Yeah, I think it's always really adjusting to the audience there.
Have you played Clap Auditorium before?
I have not. seen a couple of shows up there. That's a very nice venue, and I guess they're really wanting to raise some funds with some donations for these concerts to rehab the facility so that there can be more up there. So,
well, you do write lyrics. What we heard at the beginning of this was, as you put it, a ditty, but you do write lyrics.
Right.
Would you mind letting us hear some lyrics?
Okay, let's do one. Got to retune here a little bit.
That's fine.
Of course, every song has a story, and this one is actually a dialogue with myself. I'm trying to not be so judgmental with myself in conflict, and that's where this one came from. I don't need the same frustration spoke to yesterday. I don't want your conversation if it always goes that way. I don't want your conversation by the way it might have been. I don't need your consternation only trying to save my skin. It's been a long day, yeah. Stretching in the dirt of my bed. I'm so far. Time I judge about you, lose a chance to see myself. Wasted time, wasted dime, just put it on the shelf. You know that it's the same day as it was yesterday. I don't know what I'm doing, it always goes that way. It's been a long day. Save your time. I'm not trying to be funny. Whatever you do is fine. It's been a long day, yeah. Scratching in the dirt for my pain. I'm so far away. It don't even look like I should stay. Just living on the bio. Dreaming about the sea. It ain't pretty, it ain't lucky. It's there for all to see. It's been a long day, yeah. Stretching in the dirt on my bay. I'm so far away. I don't give a look like I should stay now. I don't give a look like look like I should stay.
Bruce Allen will perform with friends at Clapp Auditorium on Mount Sequoia on Tuesday night. The performance is the latest in the first Tuesday series of concerts designed to help raise funds for the restoration of Clapp Auditorium. Bruce talked with me yesterday inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
Eureka Springs presents the St. Petersburg String Quartet and prodigy violinist Claire Luann Wells for Classical Cuisine and Strings this Saturday at the Crescent Hotel and in concert this Sunday at 2 p.m. in the Historic City Auditorium in Eureka Springs. Tickets and more information are available at cicmusicfestival.org.
The 2012 Joe Martin Stage Race is this week, with events through Sunday at various locations in northwest Arkansas. This cycling tour features over 700 athletes from 20 countries and all 50 states competing on pro and elite amateur levels. A spectator schedule and more information available on the web at joemartinstagerace.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me is Teresa Maurer. Teresa, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back, as always.
Our slow food, what, ambassador?
Yeah, local liaison. Food ambassador, yeah. Floating, roving food reporter. That's how I just introduced myself to Lucy.
Well, we should introduce everyone else to Lucy. Lucy Kagan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You are with Appleseeds.
I am.
And some people know what Appleseeds is, some don't.
Yes, well, Appleseeds is a nonprofit. We're based here in Fayetteville. We started in 2007, and we're a nutrition education program, and we focus on gardening clubs, healthy cooking classes, and we also do field trips and other outreach activities for our plant to plate program.
Plant to plate, signifying trying to understand completely the food chain, I guess.
Yeah. So folks can get a concept of, you know, taking food from its initial stages, from planting it to growing it to taking care of it, harvesting, and then the fun part, eating.
What strikes me about Appleseeds is it works. It's ideal for a family sort of educational tableau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're really fortunate in that our programming is really flexible, and we get to include, you know, education components for younger kids. I mean, all the way down to, you know, pre-K, all the way up to adults, and hopefully working more with senior citizens as well.
And you've got some programs on schedule for the spring, right?
We do. Yeah, we're currently doing 3 gardening clubs. We've got a club at Butterfield, at Leverett, and also working with Owl Creek. And then we've been doing the healthy cooking classes throughout this past semester, as well as other outreach activities.
The garden club.
Yes.
So kids are in a club and learn more about gardens?
Yeah.
That sounds fun, actually.
Yeah, we learn about plants and stuff. But the idea with gardening clubs is, and I'll let you in on a little secret here.
Okay.
If kids grow it, they'll eat it. So, you know, in the very beginning stages, we'd, you know, offer up healthy snacks. That's one of the components of our gardening clubs, is we, you know, try and teach kids about healthy foods as well. So, you know, on day one, if you give a kid a bowl of kale, they're not going to touch that. That's scary. It's green. It's frilly. That's not going to happen. But if you have kids grow it and they get to take care of it and then eventually go out to the garden later on in the club and harvest it, I mean, I'm telling children not to eat kale because it's still growing. It's something I never thought that I would say. But it's kind of breaks down those barriers that vegetables are scary and fruits are, you know.
I think Appleseeds is doing some really interesting things. What caught my eye and what got Lucy and I together was Brenner. So what is Brenner?
Well, I wish I could take credit for this idea. We've been partnering with Fayetteville Public Schools and with Chef Adam Simmons, who is the child nutrition director for our school. So the guy in charge of your children's food is Adam. And we've been partnering with him this past spring and also last year. And he had a concept this round for a cooking class to do a breakfast for dinner, a.k.a. a Brenner. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, ran it by us, and we thought, brilliant, why not? So that's what we'll be doing on Thursday.
And so breakfast for dinner, so?
Breakfast for dinner. We're going.
Eggs.
Yeah. It's going to focus on eggs. We're going to make a vegetable frittata, which is kind of a fancy omelet, basically. Mm-hmm. It's really easy. All of the recipes that we've had for our cooking classes are designed to be budget-friendly, easy, and healthy. And just kind of try and break down the barriers that healthy eating is, you know, intimidating or more expensive or really time-consuming, and just, you know, try and present folks with some simple recipes that they can create at home.
And this takes place Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Thursday at 6:00 in the cafeteria at Owl Creek, and it's free, and kids are more than welcome. We'll have some kids' activities going on, and I wish I knew more about the menu, but we'll have to wait and see, other than a veggie frittata, what we're going to be serving.
And so, this is open to?
Open to the public. Any and all are more than welcome, and everyone that comes will receive a recipe booklet, and in there are, obviously, recipes, and then some resources, healthy cooking and healthy eating resources, and some substitutes to use in cooking, you know, so instead of oil, you can replace things with applesauce and tips like that. And then everyone will get a very generous, we say samples just to be safe, but it usually ends up being a pretty good size meal.
Can complete novices come to this? Someone who doesn't know how to boil water?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, now you mentioned recipe book. Teresa, last time you were here, you promised a recipe.
I did. And what I brought you today was a recipe for salad dressing, because right now in the market, there is a rainbow of lettuces and greens and all kinds of great things to make a salad.
Any kale?
So there is kale there.
Oh, good.
And you can put kale in your salad, too, for a really interesting boost. So that's what's fun. I mean, right now, you could probably make 1,000 combinations of salad with what's in the market right now. But this is it's a Dijon vinaigrette, or Jim's famous salad dressing. Jim's my husband. And he brings it to potlucks, and people always want to know, you know, how do you do this? And it's simple, and it is money-saving. So I thought I'd pass it along.
Please.
So that people would have a way to go out and make an excellent salad. The other thing that's fun, as you know, Kyle, one of the things I like to do is give a recipe that you can play with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about the recipe and then tell you how you can play with it.
Okay.
More mustard, more of this, more of that. So, okay, for 1 cup of dressing, you take 1/4 cup of balsamic vinegar. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds like a complicated thing, but balsamic vinegar is available any place. Look for the Italian stuff if you can. And if not, it'll do. 2 tablespoons of Dijon, and that can be the country style chunky or it can be smooth. I sort of like the smooth myself. Whisk it together, a fork, a whisk, whatever. Just kind of whisk those two things together. Then take 3/4 cup of olive oil and then kind of keep whisking and pour that in as you go. Or you can put it in a jar and just shake it like crazy.
Yeah, that's what I like to do.
That's what I like to do. But, you know, if you feel like whisking and you're kind of into it, you can do that.
So right now we've got all these combined.
Right. You've got it combined. But do put the vinegar and the mustard together first and then start adding the oil or shake it, whatever you want to do. Okay. So you've got your basic salad dressing there. Now you add 2 teaspoons of minced or pressed garlic. And this is where you can play. You can go up with the garlic. We like lots of garlic. Or you can go down with the garlic. And that's basically it. Then you add a little salt and a little coarsely ground pepper and shake up the jar again, and you've got your salad dressing.
Voila.
Voila. And it is, again, you can play with it if you want more of a bite. Put more Dijon in there. If you're afraid of so much oil, that's okay. You can reduce the oil a little bit. It's very forgiving. Then you can store this in the refrigerator, just in a jar, glass jar. And then because the olive oil gets a little solid on top, take it out a little while before you're ready to serve it. Give it a good shake again, and it's ready for your salad.
And Lucy, if someone can't make it this Thursday for apple seeds and Brenner, where can they find out more about apple seeds in general?
We have a website, and it's appleseedsinc.org. We also have a very active Facebook page. You can just type in Apple Seeds Inc., or it's facebook.com/appleseedsinc.
Thank you both very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Kyle. Thank you.
As we mentioned earlier in the program, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder spoke to more than 1,000 people last night in Little Rock. He said in his speech that he would designate an employee to oversee the Justice Department's anti-human trafficking efforts. Nathan Vandiver has this report.
The Attorney General told the crowd of over 1,000 his department and the President's administration are taking a zero-tolerance, one-strike approach to human trafficking violations. He says over the past 3 years, there has been a 30% increase in human trafficking prosecutions, and a record 120 defendants were charged this past year in U.S. courts. Many of the prosecutions, he says, are a result of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division, but have also come from heightened collaboration between other divisions of the department, as well as with the FBI and U.S. Attorney's offices.
Because it is not uncommon for traffickers to be involved in a variety of other criminal enterprises, such as the trafficking of drugs or firearms and financial laundering schemes, we are taking steps to ensure that investigators and prosecutors who work on organized crime, gang, and financial crime cases are fully trained to identify human crimes and human trafficking victims.
Holder stressed that human trafficking is a thriving economy for criminals within the borders of the United States as well as throughout the world.
Human trafficking victims often are hiding in plain sight. The young woman who traveled to America for the promise of a new life but finds herself enslaved and sold for sex. The child who was born here but ran away from home and in desperation accepted help from the wrong person. The migrant worker who was deprived of identification, transportation, health care, and access to money in order to ensure complete dependence on his employer. or one of the many young girls regularly shuttled to truck stops along I-40 who was filled with shame and empty of hope, living in fear of incarceration and in doubt of her ability to survive on her own.
Holder says the employee who will now oversee human trafficking justice programs will increase the success of their efforts.
This step will allow the department to continue to break new ground and to more quickly develop and implement the most effective possible approaches for meeting our shared public safety goals and our moral obligation of preventing human trafficking, protecting victims across the country, punishing perpetrators, and empowering victims to move forward as survivors.
Holder expressed appreciation for the progress Arkansas law enforcement officials have made with their collaborations and aggressive enforcement of human trafficking laws. The Attorney General also singled out Little Rock organizations Safe Places and Partners Against Trafficking Humans, or PATH, as exemplary for their work serving trafficking victims. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Nathan Vandiver.
And it's time for a trivia question. We're going to yesterday, by the way, we only had one right answer on the question that what was the only country, a member of NATO, that had one standing army. It was Iceland. We were trying to give away two packages to Eureka Springs, so we're going to give the second one away today. This will include your chance to eat at the Crescent Hotel dining room and hear music Saturday night, and then a full concert by the St. Petersburg Quartet at the City Auditorium on Sunday.
Okay.
No lodging included here.
All right, so that's the question.
Okay. Question is, on this date in 1939, DC Comics introduced one of its most famous superheroes in Detective Comics.
Okay.
Who was it? Right.
Okay.
1939.
All right.
Okay.
If you know, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of April, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Kooser, born Ames, Iowa, 1939, who said, "I had a wonderfully happy childhood." He started writing poetry seriously as a teenager. He said, "I was desperately interested in being interesting. Poetry seemed a way of being different. Went to college, flunked out of grad school, took the first job he was offered at a life insurance company, worked there for 35 years. Ted Kooser says, "I believe that writers write for perceived communities. I worked every day with people who didn't read poetry, who hadn't read it since they were in high school, and I wanted to write for them." So, every morning he got up at 4:30, made a pot of coffee, wrote until 7, then he put on his suit and his tie, and he went to work. It's the birthday of Howard R. Garris, born in Binghamton, New York, 1873, who gave us Uncle Wiggily, the old rabbit in the suit and the top hat. Garris was a reporter for the Newark Evening News. He wrote hundreds of children's books, published his first Uncle Wiggily story in a newspaper in 1910. It was so popular, he ended up writing an Uncle Wiggily story 6 days a week for more than 30 years. Howard R. Garris said, "Half the fun of nearly everything is thinking about it beforehand or afterward." It's the birthday of Ella Fitzgerald, Newport News, Virginia, 1917. When she was 16, she entered a contest at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, walked on stage wearing ragged clothes, men's boots. She sang "The Object of My Affection," won the contest. Soon she was fully employed in the nightclubs of New York. Ella Fitzgerald, who said, "The only thing better than singing is more singing." And it's the birthday of Paget Powell, born Gainesville, Florida, 1952. Went to college, studied chemistry, spent 8 years as a roofer in Texas, working on a novel on the side. His latest book comes out this summer, "You and Me." Here's a poem by Ted Kooser on his birthday, a poem entitled "How to Foretell a Change in the Weather." Rain always follows the cattle sniffing the air and huddling in fields with their heads to the lee. You will know that the weather is changing when your sheep leave the pasture too slowly and your dogs lie about and look tired, when the cat turns her back to the fire, washing her face, and the pigs wallow in litter. Cocks will be crowing at unusual hours, flapping their wings. Hens will chant. When your ducks and your geese are too noisy and the pigeons are washing themselves, when the peacocks squall loudly from the tops of the trees, when the guinea fowl grates, when sparrows chip loudly and fuss in the roadway, and when swallows fly low skimming the earth, when the carrion crow croaks to himself and wild fowl dip and wash, and when moles throw up hills with great fervor, when toads creep out in numbers, when frogs croak, when bats enter the houses, when birds begin to seek shelter, and the robin approaches your house, when the swan flies at the wind and your bees leave the hive, when ants carry their eggs to and fro, and flies bite, and the earthworm is seen on the surface of things. How to Foretell a Change in the Weather by Ted Kooser, from Flying at Night, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by CenturyLink, linking Americans and Fortune 500 companies to what matters most. Learn more at CenturyLink.com. Edited by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Okay, time to answer our question again. One winner, all the correct answers go into the ceramic cow. One winner will receive tickets as part of the Summer Music Festival in Eureka Springs. It's this weekend. It features the St. Petersburg String Quartet. You'll win tickets to the Friday night dinner at the Crescent Hotel and the performance there, and then the Sunday afternoon full concert at the City Auditorium. So okay. Quite a deal. Question was, on this date in 1939, DC Comics introduced for the first time, well, I guess if you're introducing, it's the mm-hmm. first time, introduced one of its most famous superhero characters in the comic Detective Comics.
The only detective I can think of is Dick Tracy, but I don't know if that's a comic.
Well, you know, and that it was, uh-huh. and that makes sense. It's Batman.
Oh, because he counts as a detective.
He did, especially in the early mm-hmm. going.
See, I was going to guess Batman because I know it's a DC comic,
right.
But when you say detective, right. kind of throws me.
He, at one time, I think in the 30s and 40s, was billed by the comic as the world's greatest detective. He solved mysteries more than...
Right.
And then slowly he began fighting superpowered supervillains.
Right. Okay. Well, that's the only version I know of him, so...
Yes. Well, right. The Fort Smith Chorale will perform its 31st Annual Spring Concert, Light Eternal, on Thursday, 7:30 p.m. The concert will be held at the First Baptist Church in Fort Smith and will highlight John Rutter's Requiem, plus folk songs from Germany, Ireland, and the Americas. Tickets will be available at the door. Details available on the web at fortsmithchorale.com. And support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering a blend of local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. More information is available online at nwaonline.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Cave Springs.
Cave Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Which you go through, many people go through to get to the airport.
Yes.
Yes. You do not speed through Cave Springs.
You should not.
You should not. You don't do it more than once.
No, you don't.
No. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And have a great Wednesday.